It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A group from West Virginia recently visited the Texas-Mexico border to help asylum seekers trying to come to the U.S. These folks from Marshall and Pocahontas counties don't speak Spanish and could just have sent money or supplies, but said they wanted to be present.
United States of America is not an unfriendly country. There's a lot of good people, and we have to let these people to know that. You have to show, give them some kind of hope.
We'll have that story coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. Federal regulators Monday released two proposed changes to rules on the disposal of coal ash and wastewater from power plants. The toxic residue from burning coal is a major concern in the Ohio Valley. Brittany Patterson reports.
Coal ash is one of the largest waste streams in the country and often contains toxic compounds like arsenic, lead, and radium. Following major coal ash spills in 2015, the EPA instituted a new rule that required utilities to conduct extensive groundwater monitoring around waste sites. The regulation also set timelines for the closure of coal ash ponds or landfills found to be leaking contaminants within 6 months. The Trump administration extended that deadline through October 2020. Now it's proposing to move the deadline up by 2 months, in part to address legal challenges surrounding the rule. But some ash sites will be eligible for more time. The EPA is also proposing changes to another 2015 rule that regulates water discharge from power plants, also known as effluent. The changes include relaxing some pollution limits and extending the compliance deadline by 2 years. The agency says the new effluent rule would achieve greater pollution reductions than the 2015 rule at a lower cost. Environmental groups disagree and argue the rule will expose millions of people to toxic pollution. An analysis by the resource and partner station WFPL found nearly every power plant covered under the EPA coal ash rules had coal ash waste sites with evidence of contaminated groundwater. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Brittany Patterson.
The West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals has selected the next two justices who will lead the court. As Dave Mistich reports, state justices also have agreed to once again limit the chief justice's term to 1 year at a time.
In a news release, the state Supreme Court says Justice Tim Armstead will become Chief Justice in 2020 and Justice Evan Jenkins will take over in 2021. The court made the selections at its last administrative conference. Governor Jim Justice appointed Armstead and Jenkins to the court in September 2018 to fill the seats vacated by the retirements of Menace Ketchum and Robin Davis. Those vacancies came as a result of an impeachment investigation into the court for lavish spending on office renovations and other misuses of public funds. Both Armstead and Jenkins were elected in last November's special election to retain their seats until the expiration of their respective terms. Armstead's seat will run through the end of 2020, while Jenkins' term will expire at the end of 2024. Armstead will take over as Chief Justice for Beth Walker, who was acquitted in October of 2018 on one article of impeachment and has remained in office. She became Chief Justice at the beginning of this year. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich.
Police in Morgantown are continuing to investigate the source of vape pens that they say caused two area high school students to overdose and wind up in a local hospital. In a Monday news release, Morgantown Police Department and the Mon Metro Drug Task Force say they were able to identify and confirm one source of the suspected vape pens and vaping solutions. During the investigation, a suspect was identified as a juvenile high school student who distributed at least one of the devices. The ongoing investigation led detectives to get a search warrant that resulted in the recovery of more than 100 charged vape solutions, marijuana, packaging materials, and empty vape cartridges that were being filled with the suspected vaping solution. Police say a device labeled TKO has been confirmed as one contaminated with heroin and other dangerous chemicals. Morgantown police are asking parents to throw away vape pens or turn them in for testing. The department says they are not interested in charging anyone who turns these items in, but are focused on the source of this potentially deadly product. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:48. cloudy skies today in the north where there's a chance of rain. Mostly sunny in the south with increasing cloudiness. Highs today in the 40s and 50s. Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the 30s. Sunshine tomorrow with highs in the 50s and low 60s. Clear tomorrow night with lows in the 30s. There's a chance of rain on Thursday with highs in the 50s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by Charleston Town Center, presenting Santa's official arrival with Jet from Ready, Jet, Go, November 14th at 5:15 p.m. in Center Court. Details available at charlestontowncenter.com. For many West Virginia residents, immigration is an issue that's mostly only encountered in the abstract, through news reports and from behind screens. But a group from Marshall County recently felt compelled to take the trip to the border to see if they could do something to help asylum seekers. Glennis Board followed the group to learn more about the realities of the crisis at the southern U.S. border and the people who would try to help them.
He's lived his whole life in Moundsville, West Virginia, but today Tom Lawther found himself pulling a wagon full of food across the U.S.-Mexico border, wearing a t-shirt that says,
"The Land of Hope and Dreams." I just thought it would be kind of a positive message to the people who are trying to get here that we accept them and want to help them.
According to U.S. Census data, West Virginia has the lowest foreign-born population in the country. But residents like Tom are still concerned about shifting immigration policies.
My mother was an immigrant. She was born 100 years ago next month, and she came to the United States from Scotland seeking a better life, and worked out for her and her family. So, you know, if it's just a chance to give back, maybe help somebody else live the same dream that we did.
Is that why you're here?
That's one of the reasons, trying to honor her.
Tom is part of a group from West Virginia that felt compelled to visit Texas in light of news about the crisis of migrants and refugees on the border. His Catholic parish priest, Father Todd's son, organized and is leading the group. Earlier in the day, in the car on the way to the border, Father Todd's son talked about how he first came to West Virginia as a teenage refugee himself during the Vietnam War.
If I do not leave, we would not have no future, absolutely. Because my father would get either in prison and later get killed. And we are too young to take care of ourselves. We don't have a choice to stay.
Father Tatsun says his experiences watching millions die around him, including members of his own family, ultimately led him to the priesthood in an effort to find meaning and make sense of life. While his personal experience informs his perspective, he says ultimately his Christian values to help those who suffer inspired him to come to Texas.
United States of America is not an unfriendly country. There's a lot of good people, and we have to let these people to know that. That's why I'm there, because much more presence. You have to show, give them some kind of hope.
Father Todd's son and his group set out to make a meal for 650 asylum seekers. Armed with boxes of noodles, cans of tomato sauce, spices, salad, and hundreds of fruit cups, the group made their way to the kitchen at the Good Neighbor Settlement House, a small day shelter in one of the poorest pockets of Brownsville, Texas.
And then we've got a lot of donations that need to be gone through.
Marianella Watson is a retired school teacher. She's been volunteering, managing temporary emergency care for asylum seekers here for a little over a year.
We went from serving anywhere to 120 a day to now it's very, very, the number is very small, maybe 20 a day.
All have been vetted and are legally in the U.S., but a recent immigration policy shift dictates asylum seekers must now remain in the closest country of safe harbor until their cases can be heard. Marianella is very worried about those who would have been here had the rules not changed. She's haunted by stories asylum seekers told her about sexual crimes and kidnappings for organs and human trafficking in their home countries and in Mexico.
Our country has said, don't go to Tamaulipas. It's a very dangerous state right now in Mexico. But yet we're sending them back there to, quote, unquote, be safe while they're waiting for their court date. That doesn't make any sense.
About 1,600 are camped now across the border in Matamoros, Mexico, waiting for their day in virtual court, with teleconference judges and makeshift courtrooms set up across the U.S. border in big white tents. Of course, these volunteers from West Virginia didn't come here to sort out world affairs. Back in the kitchen of the Good Neighbor Settlement House, West Virginia church folk are preparing a meal they'll have to walk across the bridge and deliver into the camps on the Mexican side of the border.
Start
scooping.
All right, my turn. Excuse me, dear.
One of the volunteers leading the cooking effort, Jane Klug, is also a retired teacher. Before leaving West Virginia, Jane heard from a lot of her own community members who strongly disapproved of her decision to volunteer in Texas.
They have families, and they're used to taking care of their own. I am not married. I have no children of my own. Therefore, I think my whole perspective on the world is different.
Jane and the rest of the group fill 70 large tin pans with pasta, salad, or fruit. Then load the tins into wagons, the colorful canvas kind with bigger wheels you might see at a picnic. A grassroots organization called Team Brownsville provided about 25 wagons and extra hands to pull the food across the border. The team of local volunteers organizes visiting humanitarian aid groups like the one from West Virginia every day and has since July 2018. So, with wagons in tow, each individual pays a dollar in quarters to get into Mexico by way of a walking bridge that crosses over a narrow but deep river full of vegetation.
This is the river.
This is the Rio Grande.
Many lives have lost in this little river trying to swim it across.
So that's
this is
USA.
The Rio Grande
this
river.
Is Mexico.
It's a warm evening, but it was hot during the day, and temperatures could drop into the 50s by morning. Hundreds of camping tents are wedged next to each other, many on concrete. Men are already forming a line. Women and lots of children cluster in another. Soon, volunteers are dishing pasta and salad. As a flock of wild parrots flies south overhead, we're told not to venture too far away, since no one can say for sure who is in other nearby camps. There are no real bathrooms or showers anywhere. Clothes are hung from trees and fences in every direction, still drying out from a torrential downpour that flooded the camp the week before. This camp is predominantly made up of Hondurans, as a regular Team Brownsville volunteer, Brendan Tucker, explains.
Which is Fuerajo. See, Fuerajo means leave ho, which is Juan Orlan Hernandez, president of Honduras. If you say Fuerajo here, half the people will say it back. So it's a rally cry across the country, which means leave ho, which is the initials of the president. And people get it, you know, that's why they came here in the first place. Hey, hola amigo, ¿cómo estás?
Several hours later, the group makes their way back across the border through U.S. Customs. They'll spend the rest of the week volunteering for aid agencies, painting, organizing supplies, and greeting the few who do make it across. Back on U.S. soil, Tom Lawther, with the Land of Hope and Dreams shirt, is standing at the border wall, or border fence, really. It's reinforced here with a lot of barbed wire, a stark reminder of harsh realities. But Tom says he feels hopeful.
I mean, there's sadness here, but there's a heartwarming, too, just how much they're willing to help. And the children, I guess, is the most heartwarming. They haven't lost their spirit. They just still seem very happy, hardworking people to me.
Tom says he's inspired by the volunteers who live here. He says they also have to deal with people who give them a hard time for helping out, but they help anyway.
You know, I'm just thankful that somebody organizes to give me a chance to actually do something, even if it's a small part, to help a little bit.
Hope and gratitude were common takeaways for all the volunteers who flew home to West Virginia. They report that despite the harsh realities they saw and learned about, opportunities to share human interactions and see how generosity and kindness can be received left them feeling hopeful that for some people, anyway, tomorrow could be better. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glynis Board in Brownsville, Texas.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.